Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, crime stories. Later on, Jack Webb of Dragnet fame stars in a precursor to that series on Pat Novak for Hire. Right now, it's an episode of The Whistler called Quadrangle. This all that has survived from a CBS broadcast from August 29th, 1954.
The Whistler. Presented by the United States Air Forces in Europe.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
The Whistler's strange story, Quadrangle.
On the edge of Cartertown, a small aging community in Northern California, stands the equally aging structure known as Channing House. The house proper, with its wide quadrangle wall and flanking trees, has been the subject of many a budding artist's brush and oils. Jeffrey Channing interrupts his morning stroll through the grounds to listen to the conversation of the latest artist at work on a canvas of Channing House.
Never seen anything
a girl, slender, young, and attractive, talking with a young male companion.
It's an interesting place, isn't it?
Both are too absorbed in work and conversation to notice Jeffrey, although he appears quite interested in what is being said.
Now, if you think the place is different, Leah, you should see the inside.
I'm quite satisfied here, Ned. The old house is a perfect subject.
Old Agnes Channing is something of a subject herself. At least she's a character. Always having the place worked over. Remodeling, changing. The old girl really keeps Sam on the jump.
Sam?
Caretaker.
Oh.
Yeah, jack of all trades. Been with the Channing family for years.
Mrs. Channing, does she live in the big house alone, Ned?
No, there's her nephew, Jeffrey. Friend of mine, by the way. Really devoted to the old girl. Stays pretty close. Does his best to keep her from brooding.
About the colonel, you mean?
Yeah. Mrs. Channing claims to want the hammer and saw going because it reminds her of the colonel. Keeps him alive in her heart. He was always puttering around the place, you know, building one thing or another.
Hello, Ned.
Huh? Oh, Jeffrey. Going to order us off the property?
Well, no, not if I can win an introduction by allowing you to stay.
Certainly. Miss Munson, Jeffrey Channing.
How do you do, Mr. Channing?
Well, if you're an artist, Miss Munson, you must see the inside of Channing House sometimes. Quite picturesque. You'd enjoy it.
I would. I really would.
Well, we'll arrange it soon. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Channing.
Your turn, Jeffrey. Walk away along the path of the house. An attractive, exciting girl, isn't she? And you tell yourself you do want to see her again soon. Suddenly, an odd sound reaches you. Not the sound of carpentry, is it, Jeffrey? No, the dull, frightening sound of a pick striking against stone. You break into a run. Finally, as you enter the garden, you slow down. Stare with an expression of relief on your face as you catch sight of Sam, the man of all work. He's only tearing down the old fountain, not the wall, and there's no cause for alarm at all. You continue along the walk and then enter the house.
Jeffrey?
Good morning, Aunt Agnes. Didn't keep you waiting, did I?
No, I slept late this morning. Breakfast is ready. Do sit down. Are you out for your usual morning stroll?
Uh-huh. Met a friend from town. He'd brought an artist out. I promised her a look inside.
Oh, Jeffrey, I wish you hadn't.
Well, now, what harm
could
there...
Oh, please, I don't want gawking curiosity seekers wandering through the house. The memories here, they're too sacred.
Yes. All right, Aunt Agnes. Pass the marmalade, would you? Very decent of you to understand about my aunt, Miss Munson. She can be quite stubborn.
She isn't being stubborn.
Well?
She's entitled to privacy with her memories. How did her husband, the Colonel, die?
Oh, it was an accident. He was with me. It was a fishing trip. We were out farther than we should have been. A squall came up, capsized our boat.
He was drowned?
Yes. Yes, that's right. His body was never found. I guess I've always held myself to blame in a way. I suppose that's why I lean over backwards to make things easier for Aunt Agnes.
Hello! Hello!
Ned!
Ned! Come
over. I've been looking all over for you, Leah.
Jeffrey, that is, Mr. Channing just happened by. He was kind enough to show me the garden.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, Jeff, when is your aunt going to have the big wall around the place torn down?
The wall?
Yeah. She's torn down everything else.
Well, I rather hope she won't go that far, Ned.
Quite a project, I'd say. Why, I've never seen a wall so thick, so messy.
Don't be fooled, Leah. It isn't as impressive as it looks. The wall's hollow. Right, Jeff?
Yes. It is.
You want to scream the words, don't you, Jeffrey? Because the wall has been on your mind so much the past 5 years. Yes, it's hollow, isn't it? And it's one landmark you'll do everything in your power to prevent your aunt from destroying. That's because of what the hollow wall contains. Colonel Channing didn't perish at sea, did he, Jeffrey? No, you killed him in a blind rage when he refused to loan you $5,000 you needed. In the dead of night, you placed his body inside the wall and sealed it up. Then you invented the story of the drowning at sea, and everyone believed it. Everyone, that is, with one possible exception. You've often wondered about Aunt Agnes, haven't you, Jeffrey?
Mr. Channing, are you all right?
He's dazed, Leah. Over you, I'd say. Just call him Jeffrey. He'll be all right.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'll be all right, Leah.
I thought so. Got something else to think about, haven't you, Jeffrey? Something beside Aunt Agnes and this old house.
Yes, Ned, I do have something else to think about.
It's been 5 years, hasn't it, Jeffrey? 5 years since you killed old Colonel Channing, hid his body in the hollow wall surrounding Channing House. And you've never been able to leave, to stay away for any length of time because of your aunt, Agnes Channing. And her constant remodeling is a threat to your safety. If she ever wanted to have the wall torn down, your 5-year-old story of the fishing accident, the Colonel's death by drowning, would be proved a terrible, desperate lie. And that lie would send you to the gas chamber. You wonder now in the days that follow what you can do about it, because you know that your interest in Leah Munson, the attractive young artist, is more than a passing one. Each day you'll meet outside the garden, walk together and talk. And she seems to be growing more fond of you day by day.
Oh, Jeffrey, I don't know when I'm ever going to finish my painting. You won't let me work.
Perhaps I don't want you to finish, Leah.
I don't understand.
Oh, don't you? Really?
Well, I...
Leah, you must know that I don't want to see you leave Cartertown.
But I must leave someday.
Why?
Jeffrey, I've got a career to think about. I've painted nearly everything here that interests me.
Leah, surely you know that I'm in love with you. I don't want you to leave ever.
Jeffrey.
Leah. Oh.
Jeffrey, there's nothing to hold you here now. I mean, only your Aunt Agnes.
Why do you ask?
You want me to stay. I want to. But I could never stay here long. My plans, my work, I must go abroad soon to study new techniques.
And I want you to. I want to go with you.
Do you, Jeffrey? Or more to the point, can you?
You've made up your mind, haven't you, Jeffrey? You've got to free yourself of Channing House. And it must be done soon, or you'll lose Leah. It's going to take a lot of thinking, isn't it? And then one evening, you're in the library, sitting across the chess table from your aunt.
Well, that wasn't a very smart move, Jeffrey. Hmm? Look. Oh, you see?
Yes, I see, Aunt Agnes.
You just haven't your mind on the game, that's all.
I'm afraid not.
It's that girl, isn't it? Leah Munson. Why don't you bring her here? I'd like to meet her.
I wanted to bring her around a long time ago, but you said...
Never mind what I said. Ask her for tea tomorrow.
Well...
Excuse me, Miss Channing.
Oh, yes, Sam. Come in, come in.
The contractors give me this estimate you asked for.
Good, good. Now, let me see here. Oh,
Jenkins gave us a better price.
Yes, I was sure he would. I'll call him in the morning and give him the order.
Yes, ma'am. Night, Miss Channing.
Good night, Sam. Now, let me see. Where were we?
What is it this time, Aunt Agnes?
Oh, Sam's going to start tearing down the old wall. First thing in the morning.
It's happened at last, hasn't it, Jeffrey? The wall. Aunt Agnes is going to have it torn down. And the secret that has remained hidden within it will be revealed. Somehow you manage to finish out the game of chess. And then hurry up to your room. You pace the floor well into the early morning hours, wondering what to do, how you can stop her. Dawn finds you stretched out in the bed, still fully clothed, staring at the ceiling. And then suddenly you're aware of a sound outside. You leap out of bed and hurry to the window.
Rain. It's raining. Morning, Aunt Agnes.
Oh, it's a miserable morning. Absolutely miserable. I do so detest rain. It's so depressing.
Oh, I don't know. I rather like it.
You look rather tired this morning. Mm. Didn't you sleep well?
No. Matter of fact, I got very little sleep at all.
It's the weather. We're in for a few more days of it, according to the paper. I'll let you have some of my sleeping powders,
Now,
Jeffrey.
If you don't mind, Aunt Agnes, I'd rather you didn't.
Oh, nonsense. I'll put them on your night table.
I suppose the sudden change in weather has altered your plans about the wall.
Yes, but I'll get around to it as soon as the rain's over. I've made up my mind to that, Jeffrey.
Yes. I'm sure you have.
Yes, Jeffrey. As soon as the storm is over, your aunt will have Sam begin tearing down the wall. It continues to rain all that day and the next. Gives you time to think things out and decide what you must do. And through it all, Sam isn't idle. Your aunt is putting to work on the staircase. And the sound of the hammer and saw echoes throughout the house from morning till night. And then on the fourth day, the storm's still raging outside. You've made up your mind and know for certain what you must do. But just how you're going to do it isn't quite clear, is it? No. That is, until late in the evening. You're alone in the study when your aunt enters.
Oh, there you are, Jeffrey. I wondered where you'd gone to.
Well, you and Sam had your heads together in the library. I didn't want to disturb you. Making plans for the assault on the wall, were you?
No. As a matter of fact, we didn't discuss it at all.
Oh. When's Sam going to finish up with the stairway? He quit rather suddenly this afternoon.
Oh, I had something more important for him to do.
Well, I'm rather tired of having to pick my way through all that lumber, those loose steps and bits of torn carpeting every time I go up and down the stairs.
He'll finish up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing, dear?
Oh, I'm fixing some hot chocolate. Just the thing for a rainy evening.
Hot chocolate.
Mm.
That sounds rather nice.
Want me to fix you one?
Yes, I'd like to try it. I don't know why the idea didn't occur to me before. Perhaps that's just what I need to. Oh, then I could throw away my sleeping powders.
Yes, that's right. You probably could.
You'd like that, wouldn't you, dear?
Well, now, you know I never really approved of your taking sleeping powders.
Well, neither did anyone else.
And accidents can happen.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. Now, about that hot chocolate.
Well, I'll have to heat some more milk. Why don't you go on upstairs to your room? I'll bring it to you.
Would you? Oh, that would be nice, Jeffrey. Very nice.
You stand there, staring after her as she leaves the study. The way has suddenly become clear, Jeffrey. It's perfect, isn't it? All your aunt's friends are well aware of the fact that she takes sleeping powders. All have cautioned her about it. A few minutes later, you hurry upstairs with her hot chocolate in your hand. Step inside your room. There on the nightstand, where she placed them for you a few days ago. The sleeping powders. You quickly empty all of them into the cup, then cross the hall and go into her room. You find her sitting in the big easy chair by the window.
You're not going to turn in yet?
Oh, no. I thought I'd sit up a while and read a bit.
Here's your hot chocolate, Aunt Agnes.
What a delightful aroma.
You better drink it while it's hot.
Well, of course, Jeffrey.
Good night, Aunt Agnes, and sleep tight.
Back in the study downstairs, you sip your hot drink. An hour goes by. The house is still. You sit there listening to the storm outside and then step to the window and peer into the darkness. And as you do, you whirl. Race into the entry hall. Your Aunt Agnes is lying at the foot of the stairs.
Aunt Agnes. Aunt Agnes!
She's dead, isn't she, Jeffrey? The fall killed her instantly. She must have tripped over a loose board on the stairway. An accident, Jeffrey, and you had no part in it. Or did you? You've got to make certain. The cup of hot chocolate with the deadly sleeping powders you fixed for your aunt is on the nightstand next to her bed. But you see, she hasn't touched it. You sigh with relief. Your aunt's death really was accidental. Then you pick up the cup. The sound of the bell startles you. The cup slips from your fingers and spills the chocolate over the pillow on the bed. A dark stain begins to spread slowly over the pillowcases. With your aunt killed accidentally by a fall down the stairway, this could ruin things for you, couldn't it, Jeffrey? You can't afford to have any trace of the deadly drink containing the sleeping powders found. Quickly, you pick up the stained pillow and hurry back to your room. Pull out one of the drawers in the old bureau in the closet and stuff the pillow inside far to the back. Close the drawer.
Judge Fuller. Oh, I'm glad you're here. Come in. Come in, come in.
Why, Jeffrey, what's the matter?
It's Aunt Agnes. Look, over there.
Good heavens. How did it happen?
I don't know. I found her just now when I came down to answer the door.
She's dead, Jeffrey.
Yes, I know. She must have been coming down to answer your ring when she fell. And she tripped over a loose step. Sam's been working on the stairs for the past few days.
Yes, yes, I see. Jeffrey, I think we'd best call the police.
The police?
Well, yes. An accident, of course, but they'll have to be notified.
Oh. Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Well, Sheriff, what do you think?
No doubt about it, I'd say. That's the way it happened, all right. Mrs. Channing tripped over those loose boards up there.
Poor Aunt Agnes.
I'm real sorry about this, Jeff. Real sorry.
It's a great loss, my boy. For all of us.
By the way, Judge, what were you doing here tonight?
Why, Mrs. Channing wanted to see me. As you know, I've been her attorney for years.
Yes?
She sent Sam around in the car to pick me up.
Well, what was on her mind?
Well, when she called, she said she wanted to discuss a financial matter, but she didn't say what it was. She did make quite a point of my being here at 11, though.
Well, that's odd. When she went upstairs, I thought she was going to retire for the night.
Perhaps you did, my boy. I don't know that she considered our appointment a secret, but I can assure you she had no idea of going to sleep when she called me this evening.
I don't quite understand.
Well, it's certainly not important now, Jeffrey.
No, I suppose not.
Can I be of any help to you, Sheriff?
No, Judge, I don't think so. Jeffrey, I guess I don't have any more questions to ask you either. As far as I'm concerned, your aunt's death was accidental. Purely accidental.
It's all over now, isn't it, Jeffrey? Aunt Agnes' death was an accidental one, in the sheriff's own words. While you had planned to poison her with an overdose of sleeping powders, you had absolutely nothing to do with it. You're no longer a prisoner in Channing House. Now you're free to marry Leah Munson. Go wherever you please, aren't you? Sitting now in the study, the judge with you, you can hear the sheriff and his men moving about in the hall outside. Presently, the study door opens and the sheriff moves into the room.
Oh, Jeff.
Yes, Sheriff?
I've been having a rather interesting conversation with your caretaker, Sam Lewis. He seems to think your aunt's death wasn't accidental.
What? What's that?
He seems to think that she was pushed down the stairs and that you did it.
And I pushed? Oh, no, really, Sheriff, why would I want to do a thing like that?
For the money? The $50,000 Sam found hidden in the stairway this afternoon?
$50,000? In the stairway?
Mm-hmm. Sam turned it over to your aunt, Mrs. Channing, right after he found it.
Well, that's probably why she phoned me to come over this evening.
She said nothing to me, Judge. Look, Sheriff,
According to Sam, Mrs. Channing told him the colonel had hidden a large sum of money somewhere in the house a short time before he died. Seems the colonel never got around to telling her where he'd hidden it. That's why she's been having the house torn apart these past 5 years, looking for it. Didn't know about that, huh?
Sheriff, you've got to believe me. I didn't know.
Sam seems to think you did. So did Mrs. Channing. She told Sam she was sure that was the only reason you'd been sticking around so close these past 5 years. Waiting for them to find the money so you could get your hands on it. It looks like she was right.
What do you mean by that?
We just found something, Jeff. Something I'm sure will convince any jury that you killed your aunt.
Me kill Aunt Agnes? No.
I'm going to have to arrest you, Jeff. We found all the money Sam turned over to your aunt.
But I didn't...
Oh, yes, you did.
We found the whole $50,000 right where you put it. Stuffed in the back of a bureau drawer in your bedroom closet. Hidden in your Aunt Agnes's pillow.
Listen next week when once again the United States Air Forces in Europe present The Whistler.
The Whistler on Tuned to Yesterday from August 29th, 1954 on CBS. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVilliner. Coming up next, Pat Novak for Hire. Jack Webb, the star of the Dragnet series, first appeared in this series on ABC in 1947. Then, because of the show's fame, decided to move from New York to Hollywood, where he was replaced by another actor. There was a public outcry, so he returned to the series, and we'll hear him from that second run, from June 18, 1949, on ABC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the American Broadcasting Company brings to its entire network one of radio's most unusual programs, Pat Novak for Hire. Sign out in front of my office says, Pat Novak for Hire. If you're trying to make a living down on the waterfront in San Francisco, you got to run things like a smorgasbord. You take a little of everything you can get your hands on. Even then, it's a bumpy ride, because down here, everybody tries to pad his part. Oh, I rent boats and do anything else good men pay bad men to do. You don't get many gold stars that way, but you pay the bar bill, and it's about as safe as a closet full of tigers. The only way you can make friends down on the waterfront is to die. I found that out Tuesday night. I went to the wrestling matches and watched Gorgeous George throw some guy around like a poker chip in Tijuana. I was in the middle of the crowd on my way out of the place when this guy stepped up behind me and started talking.
You got company, Novak.
Huh?
I said you got company. On both sides.
No. Did your friend get his face at a fire sale, too?
Can't all be pretty. Keep walking, Novak.
That gun in my back supposed to help?
That's up to you. Straight ahead and out the side door.
You got the right growl, but the wrong guy, mister.
You keep working your mouth, but nothing comes out. All right, this way.
What are your plans? Shall we take the kids?
The car right down here.
Now, look, Big Shot, in a drugstore, I get all the mystery I want for two bits.
You want things explained?
Yeah, besides Shovelhead here, I don't understand a thing.
We just want Joe Dineen.
I never heard of him either.
We just want Joe Dineen.
All right, you can have him. You're welcome. See his wife. See anybody you like. I don't even know the guy.
You're full of talk. As soon as you want to make it the right kind, you can go home. Here we are, into the back seat. You drive, Eddie.
You boys run on. I'll grab a cab.
Get in, Novak. We're not going to take a vote. That's it. Just be a good mouse.
You got a lot of time to waste it this way, mister.
You're too gabby, Novak.
And you're too tough, Junior.
And this noise is beginning to give me a headache.
Oh.
Let's go, Eddie. Novak's going to sulk a while.
He could have taken three bases on that wallop. I spread out on the back seat like a bowl of cake batter and tried to think of a guy named Joe Dineen. There was nobody on my list for that name. But the way these two gunsels acted, he was supposed to be a blood relative. I could hear him talking dimly, and I tried to follow the conversation, but it was like trying to put a smoke ring in your pocket. I don't know how long the tour lasted. It must have been about 30 or 40 minutes when the car pulled up and the big gun up started to yank me.
Wake up. Wake up, sweet boy. Come on, it's time for your 10 o'clock feeding.
Yeah, wait till I borrow some legs, huh?
Come on, you never looked better. All right, down the dock here.
Are we playing a new game or hunting a guy named Dineen?
That's right.
Good, now I know the rules.
Well, is that your boat, Novak?
It's got my name on it.
Is that your boat, Novak?
Well, what's it look like, the Normandy? Of course it's my boat. Who threw the blood all over it? One of your friends?
Maybe Dineen.
Now, look, you better back up and start a recap. I never heard of Dineen, and from the size of his friends, I'm just about as happy.
You mean he didn't rent a boat off you?
If he used that boat, he stole it, mister. I closed up tonight at 7.
You make it sound good.
It is good. I've been off the waterfront 4 hours. In the meantime, somebody takes my boat and gets it shot full of holes and sends you around a week. Who is Dineen?
A friend.
I don't blame either of you for hanging on to one.
We were supposed to meet him at your landing at 10. He was going to rent one of your boats, and we were going to meet him at 10.
There's the boat. You want to pay the damages?
We came early and found the boat piled up, blood all over, and no Dineen. You got any ideas?
Maybe he cut himself shaving. Dragged the bay, mister. I don't know your guy, but somebody did. They met him out there in the bay and cut him down.
You sound happy.
Now, look, I don't care one way or another, except he used my boat. If he wanted to die, he should have hired a Davenport. That's all I know. I never heard of Joe Dineen.
Yeah.
You and your friend here better go sap somebody else.
Sure, Novak. We'll look around, but hang on to your cards because you've still got a hand in this game.
Thanks, Mother. I'll remember that.
Watch out, Eddie! Watch out!
You all right, Eddie? Nice curve, Novak.
You're wrong, mister. My friends ride the cable car.
You made a bum pitch, Novak. Can I trust
you? All right, let go. You can't afford a fight now.
I want you for Eddie, Novak!
Sorry, fella. The water's gonna be cold.
Hey, what's the trouble? Trouble going on?
No. Whatever gave you that idea?
I'm a night watchman over here. That fellow lying on the dock there dead?
Well, if he's not, he's going to catch cold.
What about the other fellow? Maybe he can't swim.
What do you care? He doesn't.
Oh. They come here looking for something?
Yeah.
Guess they didn't find it, huh?
Somebody's satisfied. They were trying to find the guy that came out of that boat down there.
Oh, you mean the funny-looking guy?
Huh?
A guy got out of that boat a few hours ago, all banged up. I think he was in a fight.
Yeah?
Sure, somebody shot him. I think he was in a fight.
Where'd he go?
Down the dock toward the street. He asked about a fella and went down the dock.
Oh.
He asked about a fella named Novak. Do you know him?
Yeah, but I'll do my best to forget. It wasn't going to be easy to forget. I knew there was a guy wandering around San Francisco waiting to jog my memory. And before long, somebody was going to find out those two dead guys weren't doing light housekeeping down on the dock. Once homicides smell that red meat, they turn Inspector Hellman loose. That's like pouring a bottle of cyanide in a wedding cake. Oh, he's a smart cop with a heart the size of a full-grown pea. I got off the dock in a hurry and I went home. When I left, the watchman was still standing there waiting to check in the next murder and smiling like a vulture with a first option on a massacre. Well, I had to get home and look sweet in case Hellman showed up. When I opened the door to my place, Hellman was on the couch with a pencil in one hand and a movie magazine in the other.
Hello, Novak. You busy?
No, I'll just stand here and watch you. A little more of that pencil and movie magazine routine and you'll break out in a cold sweat.
Where have you been?
Staying out of other people's apartments?
I got an answer for that.
You haven't got an answer for anything, Hellman. You can't fill in the return address envelope. What's on your mind?
Can I make a call?
No, not to play cat and mouse. If you want to know about that bloodbath down on the docks, say so.
Yeah?
They're close strangers. I never saw either of them before.
You're getting loose around the mouth, Novak.
Huh?
That's right. If some of your playmates stub their toes, it's news to me. You better tell me, though. It'll save time.
Well, what's the use? If a fact walked up and sat in your lap, you'd lose it.
Suit yourself. Have a drink?
Yeah, I will. Where's the bottle opener?
Huh?
The bottle opener. You got teeth for it. I need a bottle opener, Helmut.
I don't know. Try the kitchen.
All right.
Try the light.
Well.
About this guy on the floor, Novak. Don't tell him to move because I don't think he can.
When I looked down at the guy on the floor, I felt like a burlap sack from the neck down. He was a big guy lying on his back, and you got the idea he took it hard. He didn't like the way the vote came in, because he wasn't relaxed the way most people are when they're on the prowl for a harp. He was about as rigid as a coil of wet line on a steamer deck. His face was pockmarked and the color of an old piece of abalone. Hellman was standing over him, and the shadow cut across the lower part of his face. It almost blocked out the gun, a big .38 lying about 4 feet away. The rest of the kitchen was a mess. Was torn up worse than a Japanese lantern in a high wind. Hellman was leaning against the cabinet and smiling like the banker in a crooked blackjack game.
Does he belong to you, Novak?
No, he's not pretty enough. Roll him over. We'll find out who he is.
I've already been through his stuff.
Wipe your hands. The green still shows.
His name is Joe Dineen.
You sure were popular, Joe.
Why?
The scavenger hunt. Every gonoff in town's been looking for him.
I figured you for the prize.
Two of them picked me up and lugged me down to the waterfront.
Yeah?
I told you about them. They ran into bad weather.
Why'd they take you?
Because I look like a bird dog, maybe. I don't know why, Hellman. They just took me. In the meantime, Sunshine here took my boat out and got shot up.
And he came up here to borrow your adhesive tape.
That's all I know, Hellman. He must have figured me for a part.
I got the same trouble, Novak. That gun on the floor helps, too.
That gun's second lead at best. I never saw it before.
It's the murder gun. How'd it get here?
I don't know.
Maybe the scullery maid left it. Come on, Novak. You're in the spot. You better start digging.
If I do any digging, the dirt's gonna go in your face, Hellman.
Got a nice face, too, Novak.
You better buy a big shield, Hellman. You've got a lot to hide behind.
Stop beefing. You're the host. What about the safety deposit box?
You're ahead of me on that one. You ought to have your picture taken.
He was talking about a safety deposit box when I got here.
He was alive when you got here?
That's right. Show more joy. The neighbors heard the shooting and phoned in.
Well, who did it? What did he say?
He said, tough luck, copper. That's all he said. Something about a safety deposit box and tough luck copper.
Oh, that's real fine. You let him die clammed up. You're smart, Hellman. You let him off with a third-rate tagline.
You're lucky, Novak. This way it's going to take me 12 hours to wrap you up. I'm going to run that gun through and check a couple of things, and I'll be on your tail.
I want to see you follow something up, Hellman. With that big nose of yours, you couldn't find a moose in the bathtub.
Look, Novak, you're a small-time waterfront punk. You've been lucky so far, but you're still a punk. I don't like you, and I'm going to hang you by your heels. I'm going to get you. If it's the last thing I ever do, I'm going to get you.
Hellman, if I thought you were on the level about that, I'd give myself up. Things were about as dim as a glowworm at high noon. All the leads were tucked away in the morgue. Those two stiffs on the dock checked out with nothing but a grunt, and the guy up in my place left a .38 and some mild regrets. I had the funny feeling there was a lead up there in that apartment, but I couldn't get a hold of it. Something waiting to be understood, the way a thing gets balanced on the edge of your brain, half in, half out, like the melody but not the words of an old song. Well, I didn't know where to turn. I was hunting for the shoreline on a dark night. So I looked up the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. Oh, he's all right, but he's got the idea that all liquid that isn't 100 proof lacks character. I finally found him in a little bar down near Union Square. He was talking to a blonde girl and a sailor when I walked in.
Ah, Patsy, you find me in the late October of my life, trying to recapture a few April moments.
Yeah, Jocko, I gotta talk to you.
That's what I like about good whiskey. It makes you too sentimental to be mad at yourself for growing old.
Now, look, I'm in a jam. Lay off that stuff long enough to listen.
Patsy, you underrate the grape. It's a terrible mistake. It's thrown off the whole perspective of history.
All right, Jocko.
Like that story about young Washington and the cherry tree. They blame him for that. But actually, it was his first hint of future greatness.
Yeah, yeah.
They talk about vandalism, whereas the truth of the matter is he was just preparing a few Manhattans for the family. The whole perspective of history has been altered, Patsy.
Oh, stop it, will you? I'm in trouble. Will you help me out?
Yes, if you'll allow me to get a word in edgewise.
What kind of trouble?
There's a dead guy up in my place.
Yeah. I don't know why you're in trouble. Think of his bleak outlook on things.
Hellman's nosing around and he thinks I did it.
Did you?
No. He got shot in relays, but he picked my place to quit. And there are two other dead guys down on the dock.
What were their practices?
They strong-armed me about 10 o'clock and took me down to the waterfront. We were supposed to find a guy named Joe Deneen, but they looked too ripe to somebody.
How about Deneen?
He's that guy up at my place. When Hellman got there, he was muttering about a safety deposit box and staring at a big 38. Oh, come on, you got to help me, Jocko.
Yes, where would you like me to spread the ashes?
I want you to get out and find out everything you can about Joe Deneen, will you?
He's your house guest. Why don't you go?
Hit the Chronicle and the Examiner morgues. And try to find out if he has a safety deposit box in any of the banks, huh?
Where are you going? Before prison, I mean.
I'm going down and lie in Hellman's shadow until something turns up. I need every minute, Jocko, so hurry.
Well, I'll need a quick one for the road first.
You'll get going right now, Jocko.
Patsy, you have a defiant attitude for a man on the doorstep to the next world. Try to be sweeter until you discover your normal disposition will do. You can start by paying my bar bill.
All right. Will you hurry? How much do you owe?
Oh, about $11.
What have you been doing all night? Are you crazy?
I may owe $11, Patsy, but so far I've had a better night than you have. Good night, lover.
I had to get started on some answers because once Hellman checked on those two guys at the dock, he'd go to work on me. He'd keep hacking away and finally cut me down like a piece of flint in a cigarette lighter. Well, after I left Jocko, I started down to headquarters. It was a little after midnight, and the streets were wet and silent. Except that now and then you could hear a woman's laughter coming out of the dark as you passed along. That's the only sound the night keeps whole. Well, I was cutting down Leavenworth Street when it came to me. I knew what my lead was up in that apartment. It didn't hit me suddenly. It kept shoving in like a piece of old seaweed on the water, moving in and out and finally brushing up against you. If that guy was alive when Hellman got there, that meant that maybe he could have phoned somebody. And if he did, then they'd have a record of it down at the desk. Well, I got back to my place and asked the operator. Oh, it feels good when you got the right sweepstakes ticket. She said a call had been put in from my place at 10:15 to the Ambrose Hotel, room 204. Well, at last, things were beginning to make sense. They must have made sense for about 5 seconds because Hellman called. The girl handed me the phone and he started in.
I got news for you, Novak. We checked the prints on that murder gun. They don't add.
Take your troubles to the chaplain, Hellman. I got my quota.
Yeah, you got fancy friends too, Novak. The prints belong to Jake Fidello.
Yeah, how do you spell that?
F-I-D... You're cute, aren't you, Novak?
To Jake Fidello, I'm nothing. Who is he?
Cheap punk like you, Novak. He's working out a 20-year stretch in Alcatraz.
Huh?
Yeah, Alcatraz. So there's no tie between the murder gun and the murder.
Maybe Fidello bought himself a 2-day furlough.
We already checked. The guard saw him in his cell at 11 o'clock tonight reading a book.
Guards pay the rent, too, Hellman. My boat was out in that bay tonight, and it came back full of bullets and blood. Now you're trying to tell me there's no connection. You better find out if a guy can skip Alcatraz for a few hours.
I'll wait, Novak. If you can tell me how it's done before long.
Nothing matched now. It was like the chorus girl's legs in a cheap nightclub. If Jake Fidello was smart enough to beat Alcatraz for a couple of hours, then he wasn't dumb enough to leave that murder gun behind. And what was the connection between Deneen and Jake Fidello? And who lived at the Ambrose Hotel? Well, I went up there to find out. It was a small place up near the top of Telegraph Hill, and when I rode by, I could see Alcatraz sitting out in the bay, a lonely island full of birthdays. The Ambrose turned out to be a high-toned little joint, the sort of place with a welcome mat printed in Old English. I went up to 204. The card in the door said Frederica Sims. I knocked, and when the door opened, it was like shaking hands with a flamethrower. She was a tall number, and she screamed flannel edition all over. She stood in the doorway for a minute and swayed in a nice, contented way like a snake on the right diet. When she said hello, you wanted to hand her your arm and say, twist.
Good evening.
Yeah, my name's Novak.
I'll remember. Won't you come in?
It'll save an argument.
Good. I hope you don't mind crowds, Mr. Novak.
She means me, Mr. Novak. I'm Mike Trevor.
And I'm Freddie Sims.
Well, that brings us up to date.
A drink would do so much more. You need a drink, Mr. Novak. You look a little dusty.
Don't mind her, Novak. She addresses all people as peasants.
All right, now suppose you two landowners tell me who killed Joe Deneen.
You know, Mike, I don't think he wants the drink.
We'll all celebrate when you get around to Deneen.
I don't think we know a man by the name of Deneen, particularly if he's dead.
Yes, I'm sure we wouldn't like him.
Come on, let's drop the smart talk. Come on, back in the saloon. A guy by the name of Joe Deneen died all over my kitchen tonight.
Don't get tough, Novak. If you miss your dinner, all right, but don't come up here screaming about your dead friend.
Now, look, I'm about 10 feet behind a phone call. Sedin put in a call for this number just before he died.
Then it was whimsy, Novak, or anything else you'd like to call it. We don't know the man. You can mull it over on your way downstairs.
Yeah, and you can use the time to think over that safety deposit box.
What safety deposit box?
Oh, you're jumping your cue, lady. Make it more casual, huh?
Do you know what you're talking about, Novak?
You think so.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Novak. I'll buy that key from you.
You got a deal, unless you want to pay it off with money.
You mean Joe Denise?
That's right. I'm running front on a murder rap. You want that key. If you want it bad enough, come on down to headquarters and we'll make a trade.
No, thanks, Novak. You didn't look bright, but I thought you might be hiding your brain somewhere. This way you lose money.
You lose even more, Trevor. I was going to ease you into that murder rap, but the offer's out. You'll have to struggle in and you'll be too tired to get out.
Can I loan either of you boys a pickaxe?
No, thanks. Well, I'm going to run along. Can I drop you anyplace, Novak?
I'll stay.
You know, I didn't think I could drop you anyplace. Novak, you ought to sell that gleam in your eye. Some airport could use it. Good night, Freddy. Be careful.
Good night, Mike. I can take care of myself.
Yes, if you try. That's all I was worried about.
Your friend reads the wrong books.
I'll bet you never wasted your time that way. Why don't you sit down on the couch here and have a drink, Patsy? Now that the argument's over.
Is it?
Well, at least we need a drink.
Yeah, sure. That'll make the talk come easy. About that key.
You think I want the key?
Like nothing else in the world.
That's a little rash, Patsy. But I do want it. I want it very badly.
Those are famous last words, lady. You heard the round with Mike. The prices haven't changed.
That's too expensive, darling. Here's your drink. What are you looking at, Patsy?
You? The way you slide around on that couch?
Yes.
Yeah. You belong in the Everglades.
If I were there, Patsy, I think you're the kind of a guy who'd be right around the next bend.
You sound pretty sure. That's a good way to lose your shirt.
I am sure, Patsy. I know that about us. We belong in a swamp.
Yeah.
We belong together. Because we're the same kind. We're neither good nor bad. We just are. And that has to do.
You make it sound corny, baby.
Try to hide, darling, but I can see you peeking through your fingers. I can see you awfully good from here, Patsy.
Watch out. You're backing into a corner, Angel.
But I've got you with me.
Make some more noise, huh? I like it.
It's true. I've got you with me, haven't I, Patsy?
I can still struggle.
I'll bet you don't struggle good. I'll bet you don't struggle good at all, Patsy.
I still got that key, baby.
You're a sissy.
It stays at my place.
I could eat you, Patsy. You're wonderful.
Yeah.
You never hand me my drink. And the soda at the end of the table.
Sure.
That's it, darling.
Doesn't pay much to fall in love. I spent enough time on her rug to work my way into the design. And when I finally came to, it was morning. There was nobody around the place, so I started for home. On the way, I tried to fill in the blind spots, but it was like trying to match pearls in the dark. Somebody had killed Deneen for the key to that safety deposit box, but where was the key? If the girl or Mike Trevor did it, then why were they still on the trail? Well, when I got to my apartment, the place was torn apart. Looked something like a mop closet after a New Year's Eve party. Jocko was sitting in the middle of the room listening to the water fizz.
Good morning. Where'd you get the bump on the head?
Romance. What'd you find out, Jocko?
Deneen had lots of friends and enemies.
Yeah, one of them's Jake Fidello.
He's number one on the list. Deneen had a brawl with Fidello 2 years ago. Jake promised to square the beef.
He's in a bad spot for it now.
Maybe. Deneen has no safety deposit box.
Oh, that was my out.
Perhaps you can take up folk dancing in prison. I'll send you diagrams of new steps from time to time. Fidello has a safety deposit box, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's got a lot of money floating around somewhere.
Well, well.
And a lot of women doing the same thing.
So we're getting a better shuffle now. Is the girl's name Freddie Sims?
That's right. Fidello loves her like the last 15 minutes of life. That's why he won't like it.
Get to the point, huh?
She's supposed to be waiting for him, but she's got married in Mexico to a guy named Mike Trevor, Fidello's best friend. Does it make sense?
No, it doesn't. Suppose Jake's found out about his sweetheart and best friend. Why would he kill Deneen?
I don't know, except you'll find out, Patsy, that sometimes the difference between your best friend and your worst enemy is only a matter of opportunity.
Yeah, Novak talking.
Yeah. How's the dent in your forehead?
Oh, you get around, Hellman.
Yeah, we picked her up at your apartment.
Did she tell you about that key?
A little. She made a confession, too.
She's generous.
Not to Mike Trevor. She pinned the whole thing on him and signed a statement. We're going out to pick him up now. I'll see you in 10 minutes.
Why?
In case he wants to shoot somebody, I'm offering you.
Things were moving fast now. I sent Jocko down to start repair work on the boat, and Hellman picked me up 5 minutes later. We drove out Geary and turned on Van Ness. Oh, Hellman was real subtle. He stopped right in front of the rooming house where Mike Trevor was living. The girl had mapped it out for him. Trevor was in a first-floor room. It was a quiet neighborhood. But as we opened the front door and started in, I got the idea it was going to be a tough place to get any sleep for the next few minutes.
Down on the right side here. Stay ahead of me, Novak.
You're one copper who will die in bed, Hellman.
Down the hall and be quiet. Yeah, this is it.
On this lap, you go first.
Stand back while I throw it open.
Not empty, Hellman.
Girl said he was here. Now, what's that?
Your boy's up at the top of the stairs.
You see him?
Well, he's not wearing neon pants. Go up and get him.
Come on down, Trevor. Your girl talked. Come on down and sign a confession.
I've got a better idea, copper. You come up and hand me the pen.
All right, Novak.
Move over, Hellman. He's going to argue.
He's heading for the roof. Let's go.
Hold it, Hellman. If that door up there is locked, we'll run right through the barrel.
You get one more chance, Trevor. Come on down.
That roof door is locked.
All right, copper. I'm coming down. Make a hole.
Now you got your hole, Trevor.
Yeah. Novak, you better get to that safety deposit box. Get there in a hurry. Before the girl.
Well, the city owns them now, Hellman. Let's get to that safety deposit box.
Let her have the key. What do you care, Novak? She's Fidella's girl.
No, no. There's a queer twist here somewhere. How do you know what's in that box?
So Fidella's in love with the girl. He's grateful. What do you care?
That's what makes it good. That's the way it is with love and gratitude. The love goes on, Hellman, but the gratitude changes. Well, the way things stood, there was only one place that key could be. I got to a phone and called Jocko. I told him to check out on the boat for a key somewhere on the floorboards. Jocko seemed happy when he said that some girl had come by 15 minutes ago and nosed around the boat for a while. Well, Hellman and I rushed down to the bank. When we got downstairs, Freddie was just starting into the vault.
Hello, Patsy. You look rested.
If you're on your way to that deposit box, you better think it over.
Can he stop me, copper?
No, but we can hold the dough until we check with Fidello.
Go ahead.
I don't think he's going to like it.
Oh, we'll have to see. I'll be back in a moment.
Let's go, Novak. We can hold the dough upstairs.
No, let's hang around. I just want to see 18-karat greed when she opens that box. There's the gratitude, Hellman.
Well, Patsy, I got the key, huh?
Yeah, you got everything, Angel.
How about Mike? What happened to him?
He beat you over the line by 20 minutes.
Oh? That's a nice way to let me know, anyway.
I'll try again, because you don't rate a nice way. You're not worth anything Fidello ever had.
I started an argument. I couldn't finish it.
I was wrong about one thing, Angel. When I said Fidello wouldn't like this. I think he will.
Yeah. He was a cutie.
Fidello was a thorough guy. The way he told Hellman, everything worked out but the right inning. Fidello found out about the girl and Mike Trevor, so he pulled a switch. He hired his enemy, Joe Deneen, to do the job. Deneen planted the bomb in the safety deposit box, and just to prove it was a square pitch, Fidello gave Deneen a gun with his prints on it. Deneen was supposed to kill the girl and leave the key for Mike to blow his head off. And just to make it clean, Fidello got in touch with Mike on the side and told him to look up Deneen if anything happened to the girl. That way, he figured to wrap up all three of them. But Mike jumped the gun. He started tailing Deneen and shot him up out on the bay. He followed him to my place and killed him with the fingerprinted gun Deneen was carrying. Deneen didn't get onto the double cross, but he called the girl and told her there was a lot of money in that safety deposit box. It began to look awfully big, so the girl finally double crossed Mike Trevor and turned him in. But Trevor killed those two guys in the pier, and he'd lost Deneen in the fog. And when he drove up, a couple of gunsels around got scared. Well, Hellman asked only one question. What could that girl have said to Jocko to make him let her walk in and breeze out with that key? I mentioned that to Jocko, but he just smiled.
The American Broadcasting Company has just brought you Pat Novak for Hire, starring Jack Webb. Pat Novak is directed and produced by William P. Rousseau. Jocko Madigan is played by Tudor Owen. Inspector Hellman is played by Raymond Burr. Music was composed and conducted by Basil Adler. In our cast were Yvonne Fatey, Carl Avery, Harley Bear, and Herb Ellis. This program is being released to our servicemen and women overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is George Fenneman inviting you to be with us again next week, when over most of these same ABC stations, we'll bring you Pat Novak for Hire.
Pat Novak for Hire on Tuned 2 yesterday from June 18th, 1949 on ABC. It was only weeks earlier that star Jack Webb began his long-running Dragnet series on NBC. And that wraps this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.